Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. On today's French Open Finals catch-up,
Barbora Krejcikova does the double in Paris.
Novak Djokovic takes home a second French crown.
And Britain's Joe Konta finds form on the Nottingham grass.
Kim, the French Open has come to a close. We have had the men's final today, and it was a true, true epic. Stefanos Tsitsipas versus Novak Djokovic. What were we surprised? It went to five sets. Actually, I was a little bit surprised by that. But I mean, for me, this was a bit of a mad day, really. I mean, for a lot of British fans, the football, the Euros had started, and it was just a big weekend of sport, and really the French Open and the finals was a great way to cap it off.
Yeah, the only annoying thing, Joel, was that it mostly clashed with Austria versus North Macedonia, which was obviously top of my agenda this weekend. So, you know, had to do a bit of scheduling, channel hopping.
Genuinely, I was actually in the pub earlier whilst this was going on, and I asked the bar lady to put on the French Open final, and I thought, you know, that was going to be a relatively simple ask, you know, Austria, North Macedonia in the football. Who really wants to watch that? But I got a flat out no from the pub lady, and I was there just watching the Tsitsipas Djokovic drama unfold on my 6-inch screen on my iPhone.
Was she like, Novak Djokovic who? Like, oh God.
Maybe she was a Nadal fan. She was really bitter, and yeah, she just did not want to see it on the TV. But
I think that's probably more likely. Yes, I can sympathise. And I bought a cactus yesterday, a little one for my desk, and I called it Stefanos. And I thought maybe this will be a good luck charm. But sadly, that didn't work out very well.
It was working out for the first two sets because Tsitsipas really started it in a very surprising fashion, I think, for a lot of people. You know, obviously Djokovic came through 6-7, 2-6, 6-3, 6-2, 6-4. But really, I mean, we were all, I think, in a bit of state of shock, really, about the way it sort of started, with Tsitsipas really coming out with a fast start with those opening two sets.
He had a set point, I think, at 5-4 on his serve. Oh, no, sorry, on Novak's serve. And he didn't quite make it. And then Novak broke him and Novak was serving for it. And then, you know, Tsitsipas broke back and it went to the tie break. Tsitsipas went 4-love up and then Novak sort of crawled it back. And he thought, oh, you know, Tsitsipas has got to get this set, like, surely. And if he goes a set down, you kind of think, okay, here we go, regulation. But yeah, I was like pleasantly surprised. I probably underestimated Tsitsipas. I thought he would be really, really nervous, like from the word go, like being in your first Grand Slam final. And I didn't ever see this match actually being a five setter. And when he went two sets up, I was thinking, oh, that was definitely not on the cards. And Novak did seem a bit out of sorts. You know, I always feel like when he wears his peak cap, he's never quite the same. And he did seem to be having sort of some issues, like with the sun and with his eyes at one point. And I don't know, he just didn't really seem completely at the races. And Tsitsipas was playing very well. But obviously, we know that Novak, even two sets down in a slam final, is, you know, probably still the favourite, especially against someone, you know, who's in their first slam final and is undeniably going to get tight at some point.
I think with Novak Djokovic, it was kind of fascinating to see how he was going to come back from that epic he had with Nadal in the semi-finals, because we know how hard it is to follow up such a massive victory with another massive victory. And again, we've seen at Roland Garros before, players who have beaten Rafa Nadal come a cropper in their next match or in the tournament. So, you know, we had Robin Söderling beat Nadal, lose to Federer in the final. Novak Djokovic beat Nadal, you know, a few years ago. Stan Wawrinka could beat him in the final. And, you know, with those first two sets going the way it did to Tsitsipas, I did kind of think, you know, was that on the cards again? And really kind of paying testament to the fact that how difficult it really is to, you know, follow up winning against someone, you know, in the big three, you know, all of that exertion, and then doing it again, you know, a few days later against, you know, someone of the caliber in the form that he's in Stefanos Tsitsipas. I think, you know, the other thing as well that I was sort of wondering, you know, why Djokovic was, you know, not at the races, particularly in that second set, was, you know, this was a day match. And again, I don't know if there was any sort of struggles with adapting from the night, you know, the night session, or effectively a night session that he played with Nadal, going into this day session, the conditions being a little bit different. I wonder if that also maybe took some time for him to get used to.
Yeah, I was at one point thinking, oh, if only the semi-final had been played at 2 p.m., you know, bright sunshine against Rafa. But no, I do think, yeah, it was a combination of things. But at one point, I thought also, you know, Djokovic obviously really wants this. You know, we could see that throughout the tournament, and that Berrettini, you know, the battle cry afterwards, like you could tell how much it means to him to get this title for a second time and to be the first player in the Open era to have like a double slam and have won at least twice on all four slams. So I did think, oh, maybe, you know, he wants it too much and that's actually affecting his game today. But, you know, as the match went on, as we got into that third set, there was like a very long game, wasn't there, where I think it was about 11 minutes long, and Djokovic finally managed to get that break. And that was all he kind of needed in the end to clinch that third set. And when it went to four, you could kind of tell it was starting to shift completely. And Tsitsipas had some treatment on sort of his sort of hip, lower back area. He went very quickly down a double break in that fourth set. And, you know, before long, we were into five, and you kind of thought there would only really be one winner from then on.
Yeah, it was quite fascinating from the Tsitsipas perspective, because in the semi-final against Zverev, he went two sets up and had a bit, you know, had a bit of a wobble, managed to come through in five sets. And it felt like the same story kind of unfolded in the final, in the fact that he did go two sets up. And then, yeah, he had that wobble in the third set. And I think, you know, a lot of people will, you know, agree with me in thinking that as the match went on, I think experience was going to be more of a factor. And you've only got to look at kind of Djokovic's record going five in slam finals. It's just very, very good. I think he's 5-1, his only loss being, I think, to Andy Murray at the US Open in 2012. But it did feel that, I think that it was, the longer it went on, it was going to favour more of Djokovic. And maybe Tsitsipas sort of realised that, and he felt like he needed to get across kind of a fast start. But I think, you know, his issue is that, you know, he's getting himself into these really good positions, but he still, I think, needs to understand that a best of five set match is perhaps, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And perhaps they had kind of different perspectives and mindsets going in. And Djokovic, you know, even though, you know, he was two sets down, he's got that sort of marathon approach and knows that the longer I can drag this out, the more likely he is I'm going to win it. Whereas Tsitsipas perhaps treated it a bit more like a sprint. And although you would love to go kind of two sets up, it was perhaps he had expended too much energy in winning those first two sets.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, you have to go two sets up, don't you? You have to, yeah. You know, you can't not want to be in that situation. But I think he sort of, you would probably panic a bit, wouldn't you, in that third set, thinking, I really need to win this in three, because especially if he was feeling an issue with his lower back. You know, he's played a lot of tennis over the last fortnight and so on.
Just on that, there's no, from the Djokovic camp, there's no sort of lulling your opponent into a false sense of security with this. Because I've been sort of reading and speaking to friends whether, you know, this was a sort of
a tactic.
Yeah, I know that sounds absolutely crazy. Like, you know, would you ever want to go kind of two sets down in a Grand Slam final? But I think there are kind of people who wonder about the fact that, you know, whether Djokovic was kind of creating a false sense of security and was, you know, knew kind of deep down that he was kind of able to kind of basically switch it on in that third set and really kind of, I guess, break kind of Tsitsipas, you know, mentally over the next three sets, for example. Did you get that sense? Or do you think, you know, with Djokovic, he would have probably preferred to, you know, win at least one of the first two sets?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he would have absolutely wanted to have won that first set, you know, when it went to the tiebreak. I don't think, you know, as much as I'm sure he's a genius tactical mastermind, I don't think you would want to go two sets down to sort of lull your opponent into a false sense of security. But I see what you mean. It's sort of, it's like almost an unintended like silver lining of the fact that you go two sets down is that it kind of changes your rationale and how your opponent's behaving as well.
Kim, I swear, if there is a player who is two sets down and you still think is favourite, it's Novak Djokovic. You know, talking to my friends in the pub whilst this was going on, they were still like, yeah, but Novak Djokovic will come back in five. And I think, you know, that's testament to how battle-hardened, I guess, Novak Djokovic is and his, you know, his mental strength, which, you know, we spoke about as one of his biggest positives. And, you know, he has needed that this week because this wasn't the first match he came back from two sets down in. He came, you know, back from this situation against Lorenzo Musetti as well. And again, this, I think when you kind of look back on this tournament, he really has needed to be the comeback king in order to win this trophy.
Yeah, he's had all sorts of matches, really. He's had some, you know, easy regulation matches in the earlier rounds and then a couple of four setters, a couple of five setters. So he's really proven, you know, he was the best player of the tournament and whatever you could throw up against him, he's managed to come through. And, you know, now he's on 19 slams. You know, he's just one behind Roger and Rafa. You know, he's the hot favourite for Wimbledon. A lot of people are saying he's also the hot favourite for the US Open. So he might well, you know, have the golden year and with the Olympics thrown in as well. It's, I mean, I see it very hard to sort of see beyond that, really. He is absolutely the favourite to do all of that. So he could absolutely be making history, just breaking records left, right and center. I mean, it's going to take a lot to beat Novak Djokovic in a slam at the moment.
I guess what's quite scary is that, you know, we see Nadal at Roland Garros and beating Nadal at Roland Garros as, you know, one of the biggest challenges in sport, let alone tennis. And he overcame that in the semi-final, went on to win the French Open. And you got to look at Wimbledon and the US Open and think there's not that sort of challenge there, I think, now with regards to Federer, for example, you know, on center court. I think, as we were kind of talking about, you know, a few days ago, that Djokovic really kind of, I think, you know, arguably has Federer's number now at SW19. So you wouldn't feel like there's a big over, you know, challenge or obstacle for him to overcome like a Nadal at Roland Garros, potentially, you know, at Wimbledon. I guess the unknown factor is, and this is kind of to Stefanos Tsitsipas, Daniil Medvedev, Dominic Thiem, Sasha Zverev, is how they are going to perform. Because I think they might look at this kind of Tsitsipas run and, you know, themselves be inspired and encouraged in terms of how well he has handled, I think, the tag of, you know, being the form player coming in, reaching the final. I mean, yes, I think he had a nice draw. You know, he did have a tough match, I think, against Zverev in the semis. But I certainly think those, you know, young guns and young pretenders will look at how Tsitsipas played, and particularly against Djokovic in the final. And I think that will give them a lot of encouragement. They're still going to need to go out there on the court and do the business. But it feels like with this result, even though, you know, Djokovic won and Tsitsipas, you know, lost from two sets up, I think there'll be a lot of encouragement there for players who might think that this isn't as insurmountable as perhaps it might seem.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's interesting as we're going onto the grass because we haven't had grass for two whole years. So yeah. I think a lot of players are going to be quite rusty. And I really don't know how the likes of Tsitsipas and Zverev are going to fare. And I do wonder if Tsitsipas, having, you know, lost from two sets up today, you know, we know he's quite a philosophical player, he's quite deep. I wonder how he's going to be affected by this loss and if he's going to carry that baggage into the grass. I wouldn't necessarily expect too much of him at Wimbledon. Like, he's had a fantastic clay season, but I do expect there to be some sort of drop off. Perhaps I'm underestimating him, and perhaps my cactus will come good in the end. But I don't know.
I think it's quite surprising. He's taken a wild card into Halle, and I don't think it, you know, the fact he's taken that wild card, I don't think he's going to allow kind of, you know, a lot of reflection time on this. Maybe that's the way he wants to approach this. But for me, that's a little bit, I think, surprising. Of course, this was his first Grand Slam final, and he's done very well. I think, you know, he's done better than I think a lot of us were sort of expecting. But I think it is one of those where I think we've particularly seen with, you know, for example, Dominic Thiem, you need to lose these finals before you can start winning them. And yes, we've had situations like, I guess, Del Potro, I think springs to mind with, you know, beating Roger Federer at the US Open and coming from seemingly sort of on the periphery to win. But that really doesn't happen, it feels like, at all, really. And you do need to have these losses, I think, in your locker before you can become a Grand Slam champion. And I think that will, you know, this result will make Tsitsipas stronger for Wimbledon and just generally, I think, for Grand Slams going forward. But yeah, I think he will need to draw, I think, and reflect on these. And I think understand what these kind of matchups mean and how he kind of performed on court in order to kind of draw on it in the future if and when he gets to another Grand Slam final.
Yeah, I mean, he just needed to put on Stan Wawrinka's shorts, didn't he? Because Stan was able to win, you know, in his first couple of finals.
It felt like he had those shorts on in the first two sets. I mean, just tactically, I mean, it felt like Djokovic was playing a lot more. You know, his forehand cross court, which I think was working really well in the semi-final against Nadal, you know, really pinning into his backhand, his double-handed backhand, obviously as a lefty, sort of doing the same, I think, with not the results intended in those first two sets. You know, he was going into, you know, the Tsitsipas strength in terms of his forehand, and I think he was a bit surprised with how much, you know, spin and work was coming back from those shots. And I think that the Tsitsipas forehand has come on leaps and bounds in the last few seasons. It's such a majestic shot. His backhand is not too shabby either. And it really was, I think, though, that combination and particularly his serving as well, which was, again, kind of very, very impressive, you know, really top of the line in the first two sets. I mean, he hit 18 winners, a 6 out of 6 at the net, only 10 unforced errors in that first set. And he won 87% of his first serve points in the second set. So he really was able to kind of bring it together for those first two sets. And I think, you know, what was so encouraging about that was how nerveless he was, wasn't it? It didn't, even though it was his first Slam final, it felt like he had been preparing for this for, you know, a long time. And when he was there, he was full of confidence.
Yeah, it was very impressive. I definitely a lot more with it than I thought. You know, I just kind of thought it might be very much one way traffic. But I, as you said, I do think there was a slight hangover from the Nadal win for Novak as well at the start.
I mean, he changed it up tactically, I think.
Yes.
In sets 3 and 4. And I think, you know, going down the line with his forehand, I think, helped. I think there were other things as well. But I think overall, as the match went on, you just felt Djokovic experience in Grand Slam finals with five set matches under his belt and really understanding what it takes to be a Slam champion and having come so far, you know, with the, you know, that Nadal victory. He definitely did not want to face another Stan Wawrinka situation in terms of having done the, you know, probably what he felt was the ultimate obstacle only to fall at the final hurdle.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, when Novak won this title before, that was 2016, that was Andy Murray's second victory at Wimbledon, wasn't it? So he hasn't done the clay grass slam double as of yet. So that will be the next thing on his agenda to tick off. And I mean, he looks like that's going to happen, but there's a lot still to happen. Perhaps, you know, a line judge might get in the way at Wimbledon, Pablo Carreño Busta.
Do you see Djokovic as the outright kind of favourite going into the grass court season? I mean, you spoke the fact that we haven't had grass court tennis for 2 years. I mean, do you see him as the, you know, the number one player to be? I mean, yes, he is the world number one. But do you think, because, you know, I feel like in my book, the, you know, there's more challenges, I think, from round one to a final at Wimbledon, because there are grass court specialists. There are a lot of players with big serves now that can definitely take it to a tiebreak, and maybe it's 50-50. And yes, Djokovic could have an off day, and I think he probably would need to, given, you know, some of the returns he's had this week on serve. But, you know, do you see him as the favourite? Do you see him potentially doing a golden slam this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because there's one less week going into Wimbledon this year. So there is more players will be turning up without much match practice on grass at all going into the slam. And like you said, you could come a cropper against a grass court specialist or a massive server who manages to edge three tie breaks. It's entirely possible. We've seen that before.
And also someone who's played this week and got an extra week's worth of, you know, matches in. You know, Djokovic probably not. I mean, I don't know what Djokovic's routine is going to be, because I, you know, one of the tournaments that he normally plays, the Boodles exhibition, I think, at Stowe Park, I don't think that is going ahead this year. So, you know, I don't know where he's going to find his match practice, you know, in the build up to Wimbledon, or whether he does have any sort of build up. I know previously he's not been such a, you know, a mainstay of having a lead up tournament on the ATP tour. So I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, he hasn't actually, of previous years, really done a warm up tournament, like, you know, the 1 or 2 weeks before. Obviously on the clay this year, it was a bit different with Belgrade, his home tournament. Obviously that did wonders for him. But I remember he did play Eastbourne 1 year, but that was, I think, the year that he was kind of coming back from injury, which he then went and won the tournament. I think he won Wimbledon that year as well, but don't quote me on that. I feel like he's probably not going to play, but I, you know, his game translates so well onto all surfaces. Like, as we know, he's won Wimbledon countless times, so I don't think that would be a major obstacle. And I think there'll be a lot of other players in exactly the same boat. So a bit like with Tsitsipas, yes, he's taken a wild card into Halle, but it's probably more out of necessity because there's such a short turnaround. And it's, you know, one of the only events that he could be playing before Wimbledon. So he might be doing the old classic Rafa trick of going straight from the clay, get like two matches on grass, and then having a few days off perhaps before going to Wimbledon. But we will see. Lots to talk about, obviously, with the grass coming up. But yeah, Novak, absolutely fantastic tournament for him, and his second French Open. Fair play to him. He is absolutely, you know, raking up the slams. I think it's without question he's probably going to obviously end his career with more slams than both Roger and Rafa. I think most people would agree that that's the likely outcome, unless there's something catastrophic happens.
I mean, just on that sort of debate, because as you said, Djokovic is on 19 slams now. Federer and Nadal are equal on 20. It doesn't look, I mean, the signs are for Rafa, you know, he was seen kind of limping, you know, on the TV, I think, into, you know, around the Roland Garros venue. I think he's already said he's not going to be playing Mallorca because of potentially, I think, a foot injury. So it sounds like there's a doubt there in terms of whether he's going to perhaps sit out the grass court season. And, you know, with Federer obviously coming back, you know, everyone, I think, you know, particularly Fed fans will obviously hope that he can harbour, I guess, former glories on centre court. You know, in a few weeks' time. But I mean, with Djokovic on 19, Federer and Nadal on 20, if it is a matter of time, do you feel like it could happen this season?
Well, yeah. If he wins the next two slams, he's on 21, isn't he? So I think that's quite likely. Obviously, as a Rafa fan, I'd rather it didn't happen this year. I think I'd like to extend it a little bit. It's quite nice having Rafa in the joint lead at the moment, but I mean, you know, they're all fantastic players. They're all great in their own way. And, you know, yes, it's kind of someone's going to obviously end up with more than the other, but, you know, perhaps we shouldn't be so competitive about it. You know, we all are fans of individual players for different reasons, and it doesn't take away anything from the other players if someone else kind of pips them at the final hurdle. But I think the question is, how many will Novak get? Like, could he get, I mean, dare I say, could he get to like 30? Or is that being a bit ridiculous? He's still got a good few years in him, yeah, I think.
Yeah, and I guess one, you know, consideration to this argument, I feel like we inevitably, Kim, talk about, you know, when we have Grand Slam winners from the big three, is the fact that Djokovic has done this now twice at every Grand Slam, which is something Federer and Nadal both haven't done. You know, Federer's only won one French Open, and I think Nadal's only won one Australian Open. So again, there's that is going to be something potentially, no doubt, Novak Djokovic fans are going to be looking at and saying, this is the reason why Novak Djokovic is the greatest of all time over Federer and Nadal, is the fact that he has done something not even Federer and Nadal have done so far in their careers and won each Grand Slam two or more times. And that is, I mean, just even saying that out loud is seriously, seriously impressive, given the fact that, as I said, he's now won two French Opens in an era where Nadal has won 13 and is one of the, you know, best ever clay quarters. So the fact that he's now got that in his trophy cabinet is, I think, is going to fuel potentially him being seen as, you know, a stepping stone, certainly, I think, to the greatest of all time. But I think you're right in the sense that he's going to have to overtake Federer and Nadal on 20 in order for that, I think, to be potentially rubber stamped.
Yeah, and also I think I'm sure he'd love to get the Olympic gold medal as well. Obviously, Federer doesn't have that in the singles, so that will be quite interesting when it comes to that, if the Olympics are actually going to happen this year. But yeah, I guess the debate will go on and on. A lot of people won't be very happy regardless. So on that note, let's have a quick break now. But we'll be back in the second half to talk about the women's final from Saturday. So don't go anywhere. This is The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to move on to talk about the ladies' final, Barbora Krejcikova against Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. Now, this one kind of went the distance as well. We had a three-setter between the two of them. But it was Barbora Krejcikova, unseeded, who came out on top to claim her first singles Grand Slam title. She is actually a double champion this weekend, we should say, because she also won the doubles with Katerina Siniaková. So, I mean, she's the first woman since Mary Pierce in 2000 to win the singles and the doubles at Roland Garros. She's made history, really. She's also the first Czech winner at Roland Garros since, well, 40 years ago, since Hanna Manlikova did it. So, I mean, no one would have envisaged her being the champion at the start of the tournament. You probably would have said, yeah, she's on for the doubles, but for the singles, she's kind of come out of completely nowhere. But I mean, absolute kudos to her. She was the better player on Saturday's final.
Yeah, definitely. She managed to get herself over the line. I think there were fitness concerns, particularly around Pavlyuchenkova. I think she had like extra strapping on her leg like towards the end of that second set, which I didn't think kind of bode well. But Krejcikova, you can only beat kind of what's in front of you, and she was just able to come through it. And although it was quite topsy-turvy, you know, she came through 6-1, 2-6, 6-4, I think you've got to say that it was just a fantastic achievement, given that, you know, unseeded to do the double, she had that fantastic win against Sakkari, where she was match point down, lest we forget. And to come from there, real kind of on the brink sort of stuff, to come and win the title when, you know, pre-tournament, we were talking about Ash Barty, Aryna Sabalenka, Azarenka. I mean, there were so many names Serena Williams. We were just talking about it. I think we were almost kind of forgetting that it could have been someone, absolutely anyone in the draw. And it's proven that this time round. And I think the French Open has a knack of really kind of throwing up some surprises. And I mean, she was coming into it in great form, having won Strasbourg. And I think this was just a case of, you know, the players, I think, who were in, I mean, she was in really, really good form, and it didn't matter how many, I guess, slams you'd won in, or if you were a slam winner before in the draw, if you had form with you, I think Krejcikova showed that form can carry you through to becoming a Grand Slam champion.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you need to play better tennis than your opponent. And if you're doing that, well, seven times in this tournament, and I guess five times in the Strasbourg event, you know, and you do enough to get the job done, then you win. And she's obviously been in great form. And I think mentally she is very strong. She's very calm. You know, she's been also working with a sports psychologist. So second year in a row where both like ladies champions have kind of openly said that they're working with a sports psychologist. And you could tell she was just very composed. And at the end, you know, she was getting a bit nervous. She did double fault on her third match point. And I thought, oh, she's really got to sew it up, you know, before it starts going on.
I did wonder when she didn't convert any of those match points on the Pavlyuchenkova serve. I did wonder if she was going to, you know, what was going to happen there. But, you know, it was still very, very kind of impressive. And, you know, you look at kind of Czech players, I think, over the last, I think, decade or so, there's been quite a few near misses. Yes, we had Petra Kvitova win Wimbledon in 2011 and 2014. But we've got to think Strychkova, Vondrousova, Pliskova, Mukova, Safarova as well. You know, they're all kind of there or thereabouts, you know, have gone very deep in the singles competition. But, you know, for Krejcikova to kind of get over the line, it's just been an absolute, I think, bonus really for Czech tennis. I don't think they would have, you know, it perhaps kind of expected this, or they were maybe kind of looking, you know, elsewhere. So it's been, I think, a real kind of inspiration, I think, for, you know, all of her fans and the Czech Republic back home.
Yeah, and she obviously was given the trophy by Martina Navratilova, and I think that was obviously just lovely for her to have Martina watching. And, you know, we spoke before about the fact that she was coached by Jana Novotná, and like she was the last person Novotná coached before she passed away, and that she very much felt her presence there kind of guiding her on. And I thought that was, you know, probably quite a potent factor actually, and not to be underestimated, to have that kind of inner belief that someone is kind of looking out for you, like she was saying in the post-match sort of on-court interviews. Also, really random but cool, they had the French Eurovision entry from this year singing.
I knew you were going to get that in there. I knew that you were going to get that in somewhere.
Yeah, she's also called Barbara, so it was obviously meant to be from Barbara to Barbara.
I mean, Kim, I will just say that match point was so underwhelming. It was a bit, I felt it was a bit awkward. It was a bit like, I felt like it should have been replayed to be like
more entertaining. Sorry, just replay that point. It wasn't satisfactory enough.
Well, it just didn't, it was a bit underwhelming, I thought. And the more I've watched that match point a few times now, I genuinely don't think that ball was out. And I wondered, I thought it hit, it looked like it touched the line, but it was a bit like the semi-final where, you know, the ball was out, but it had to be replayed and you kind of wondered. But this was like, it was like the different outcome here. And, you know, it was, I think, a little bit of luck, I think, for Krejcikova, but I think fully deserved. And I don't think Pavlyuchenkova was going to be able to come back in that. I think as that third set went on, she was looking a little bit on her kind of last leg really, with that you know, that leg injury. And you know, a lot of kind of, I think, talk was around kind of Pavlyuchenkova and kind of her experience and whether that would be a big factor, you know, in terms of, you know, the fact that she's reached so many quarterfinals before and really, you know, all the matches she's had on tour, and whether that would have helped her in this final. But, you know, fascinatingly, I think, you know, Krejcikova was talking about the fact that, you know, she's been in Grand Slam finals before in the doubles, and, you know, she was talking about the fact that she was using that experience and applying that from, you know, the doubles field to the singles competition. And, you know, we know that she's, I think, not keen on being known as a doubles specialist kind of going forward, and this was probably the ultimate statement to make, to be, you know, be considered as a, you know, a singles player through and through going through to the rest of the season and beyond.
Yeah, and I think in those doubles slam finals, she's got a very, very good record. So obviously she performs on the big stage, and she is very composed when it gets to that point. And, you know, Pavlyuchenkova, yeah, physically she wasn't at her best. And I don't really feel like she asserted herself enough, you know, yes, in that second set, but she wasn't at the races fully. We definitely didn't see her best tennis. And, you know, she obviously had a fantastic tournament, but I think Krejcikova was the player that sort of had a bit more, this isn't a very technical term, but a bit more oomph on the day. I mean, where do you see Krejcikova going after this? Do you feel like she's going to become like top five, or do you think she's kind of going to be one of those players that perhaps doesn't dominate the sport, but is a bit like a Kuznetsova who might get a couple of slams and win some big titles, but isn't going to be right up there all the time?
I would love to see that. My gut feeling, and I, you know, probably listeners are going to perhaps say this is a bit unfair, but I still see her maybe in the Yelena Ostapenko category of Grand Slam champions, perhaps an absolutely incredible story and an amazing run, you know, similar to Ostapenko. I always remember also Monica Puig coming out of nowhere to win, you know, the singles in the Olympics, the last time round. And I think for me that it's one of those sorts of stories. I'm not sure. I don't know if she will be able to replicate this. Obviously, I would love to see that happen. But we know the French Open is just such a strange kind of tournament. And I think as the kind of season goes on, I think, you know, maybe the way that the tour has been in going up to this point has sort of facilitated this sort of out of nowhere unseeded player winning the tournament in Krejcikova. But I just feel, you know, going onto the grass, going onto the hard, surely we're going to, you know, other players are going to kind of come back with a bang. You know, Naomi Osaka's still no slouch on a hard court. Simona Halep's been injured. She's going to be coming back. Ash Barty also, you know, for me, the competition is going to be so ripe. It's, you know, this felt for me like a very much for both of them, a now or never moment in terms of winning a slam.
Yeah, a bit opportunistic. But I mean, yeah, I fully expect also Krejcikova may have a sort of burnout after this. You know, she's played an awful lot of tennis. And
yeah. When was the last time she had a day off? Like Strasbourg champion and then singles and doubles for Roland Garros. I mean, she must be running on fumes right now.
Yeah, she's going to need a good week off before she even thinks about the grass, I think.
And get into the ice bath.
She's deserved it. But, you know, she and, well, in the doubles with her and Siniaková, they did do the Roland Garros Wimbledon double, I think, in 2018. I'm sure they won both their women's doubles prior, you know, in that same year. So, you know, I'd say she's on for the doubles in Wimbledon, but I wouldn't be surprised if in the singles she went out early. But I hope she proves me wrong. I really do. I mean, just a note on the women's doubles, because I think her and Siniaková, they played together a lot as juniors. So they are a very historic pair. You know, they know each other inside out. And it's just really nice that they've stuck together and got all these slams now. And they're actually... Yeah, Krejcikova is amongst very good company when it comes to like ladies who have won both the singles and the doubles, like at Roland Garros, like Navratilova did, obviously Mary Pierce, we said earlier, Chris Evert, Billie Jean King, like, so doesn't happen too often. So it's really fantastic. Even if it isn't opportunistic and it doesn't happen again, like she needs to relish this moment. And also I thought it was quite nice, Czech tennis of obviously having the tournament of their life on the women's side, because Linda Noskova won the girls tournament for the Czech Republic, beating a Russian in the final. But apparently also the last Czech player to win the girls singles was also Hanna Mandlíková. So they've both, you know, made history, I suppose, in the girls and the ladies. So yeah, really, really nice for the Czech ladies tennis. And obviously we know that they've won like Fed Cups of late and they've got so many players up there. So it's really nice that someone's actually got over the final hurdle for once.
Krejcikova could be an absolute linchpin, couldn't she, for I guess the Czech Fed team. The fact that she is a very good singles player, as she's shown at Roland Garros, but also a very, very good doubles player, and just I guess loves playing tennis given the amount she's played over, you know, over the last few weeks. But yeah, big congratulations to Krejcikova. Really impressive stuff. The fact that it was the singles and doubles, and we were talking about other people probably up to, you know, finals weekend. I mean, I feel like the conversation was, oh my God, is Świątek going to do the double in terms of the singles and doubles? And that did look on the cards, but Krejcikova, you can only kind of beat what's in front of you. And she just did that again, again, and again. And coming back from that one match point down against Sakkari, it was very, 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 very impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hats off to her. And just a note, Joel, as we wrap up the kind of last results from the French Open 2021, French fans will be happy because Hugues-Hébert and Mahut won the doubles. They beat Bublik and Golubev in three sets to come through that one. I think Bublik actually served for the match in that second set. So again, they're coming back from a set down to take home their second Roland Garros title.
That is the most Alexander Bublik thing I think I've heard this week, serving for the doubles title, but ending up losing.
Well, what I loved is before, at the warm-up when he was at the net, like, you know, with the umpire, he said to her, Bublik said, oh, I know I'm not supposed to be here. This is a comic situation. and I assume he was referring to the fact that, like, you know, they were obviously unlikely to make the doubles final. But, you know, he almost went and won it. He was serving for it. So maybe he should have more confidence in himself. But yeah, Hébert, who are the first French team to have won their home tournament, like Roland Garros, you know, more than once. So they'll be looking hot for the Olympics as well, as will Krejcikova and Siniaková. So
as will Bublik and Golubev.
Well, that is true. Yeah, Kazakhstan. Yeah, could get a medal with them. So we shall see. But just also one more result from Roland Garros, and that is our collector set, Joel, which is obviously the biggest most important
result. The biggest result of all, obviously.
Exactly. We have an outright winner. So we had four participants in a tiebreak, and we asked them to tell us how many games the singles runners-up from both the men's and the women's tournaments would like win in both finals. Total was 33, because Pavlyuchenko won 11 games, Tsitsipas won 22. I think my maths is correct. And we have a winner, which is Jen. So at tdun888 on Twitter. I think this is Jen's first appearance in Collector Set. So she's doing a bit of a...
Very impressive.
...Krejcikova and wrapping it up solidly. So well done, Jen. We have been in touch to arrange for a fantastic passing shot mug to be sent to you. So yeah, thanks to everyone for taking part. Well done to Jen. And well done to, I think, Stephen, Carol and Lee also, who were in our tiebreak as well.
And moving on to other tournaments that took place this week, let's start with the Stuttgart Open, an ATP 250 event. The start of the grass court season, as we remember, the French Open did push back a week. And that meant we had the second week of the French Open happening at the same time as the Stuttgart 250 grass court event. Marin Cilic came out as the winner, captured his 19th ATP Tour title. But I think, Kim, the story here again is a familiar one, because Cilic beat Canadian Felix Auger-Aliassime in the final 7-6, 6-3. And Auger-Aliassime, he drops to 0-8 in finals on the ATP Tour. I think, you know, he was positive. He said, you know, he felt like he was kind of playing well. And, you know, Cilic is a very, very, very tough customer on a grass court. But yeah, same finals woe, I think, for Auger-Aliassime.
I think he's going to end up with more finals than Julien Benneteau before he ever wins one. But the only positive thing really is that he's still so young. So actually, to have got to eight finals already is pretty impressive.
So you're saying he can beat the Benneteau record with so much of his career ahead
well,
of him?
He might. Yeah, he could get to like 15 finals and then never win, you know, or before he wins one. Because, you know, I'm sure Benneteau probably racked those up at a later age. But yeah, 0-8 in finals, and I think a lot of them, or all of them, have been straight set. So also a bit like Dinara Safina in slam finals, just, you know, one-way traffic. But no, he did play, you know, he wasn't bad this week. It's just you know, Marin Cilic hasn't dropped a set all week. I think on serve this week he has been very, very solid. I think in three of his matches he's won 100% of his first serve points. So you know, it's very hard to break down Marin Cilic on a grass court. You know, he's a former Wimbledon finalist. He's, you know, Queen's champion two times over. He loves this surface. Like, it's, you know, his best surface. And, you know, he's been in good nick. And it's nice to actually see him win a title. It's been his first title, I think, in about 3 years. And obviously sort of suffered with quite a bit of injuries of late. So, you know, it's nice for him to be going into the grass, well, into Wimbledon with a bit of form. And I thought it was interesting, actually. FAA said, today I'm not facing a final, I'm facing Marin Cilic. It's two different things. So I thought that was quite an interesting way of phrasing it. And maybe that helped, you know, don't think about it as a final, just pretend it's the first round or something.
Exactly. I think perhaps that was what the psyche he was trying to think about was, you know, I'm playing the man, not the, you know, the history. So that's perhaps the best approach that, you know, he can take going forward, but he's still going to need to get over the line. And just on Marin Cilic, he could potentially, I think, be a dark horse, you know, to upset potentially anyone at Wimbledon, because he has got form there. And if it kind of clicks, you know, between now and then, I certainly think there are going to be people looking at where he is in the draw, because he could be quite a tough customer, I think, for quite a lot of people. So let's see how his play kind of progresses over the grass court season. Moving on to the Nottingham Open WTA 250. We had some British success, Kim. We had Jo Konta winning her first title in 4 years, beating China's Zhang Shuai. It was a bit of a steamroller, really, in the final, 6-2, 6-1. Really, really impressive. I think it was the first British winner in 40 years in terms of female players at a WTA singles event. So yeah, since Sue Barker won the indoor Daihatsu Challenge event in Brighton in October 1981. So it's been a long time coming.
I'd love to have an indoor tennis tournament in Brighton in October again, please. Yeah, that would be quite nice, just down the road, bit of seaside action. Yes, please. But yeah, no, really happy that Jo managed to win that one. You know, it wasn't the strongest of fields. She didn't have to play the strongest of opponents, but I don't think that really matters. Like, it's getting that confidence, getting the wins. You know, she hadn't had back-to-back wins this season. So to have five in a row is the main thing. And to come away with your first title in 4 years. And actually, I was surprised by that, because I just assumed she would have won a title in like 2019, but actually she's got to a lot of finals since I think she won the Miami tournament in 2017, which is her last win. But she hadn't obviously managed to win those. So yeah, really, really positive start to her, you know, grass court season. I assume she'll be playing Eastbourne next, which is the week after next. So yeah, it's good. It's the best she could have hoped for, obviously, this week. And yeah, Katie Balter also had a fairly all right week, had to retire though from her, I think, was it her quarterfinal? So
yeah, against Lauren Davis.
Hopefully, yeah. You know, she's not, hopefully that was just more of a preventative thing. But yeah, fantastic week for Konta. She served really well today, and yeah, comfortable victory in the end. There was another event out in Bol, in Croatia as well, a 125 event for the women.
Bolan Garros,
yeah. You were debating how to say bowl before we started recording.
It feels too easy to be true to just call it bowl, but
bowl. I don't know how else you'd say it. Listeners, do you have any ideas? Anyway, Jasmine Paolini won that one. So the Italian player, she beat Arantxa Rus 6-2, 7-6 in the final to win her first title, I think. It was her second final of the year, and this was her first title. So fantastic victory for Paolini. Not going to lie, I didn't watch any of bowl this week, what with everything else going on. So, you know, there we go. But that does bring us on to what's happening next week. And, you know, tennis does not stop. We are straight on to the grass. Well, the grass has been, obviously, qualifying has been going underway this week. We've got two women's events, two men's events. We've got Berlin and Birmingham for the women. Birmingham's been degraded to a 250. Used to be a premier event on the WTA Tour, and it's gone down a bit, just the 250. Elise Mertens is the top seed there. Obviously got some Brits in action. Harriet Dart has got a wild card. Fran Jones has got a wild card. But, you know, you're looking at sort of Ongjabeur as the second seed. Kazatkina, Caroline Garcia. I noticed you said Sam Stose has been given a wild card as well, which is an interesting one.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that turns out. Zhang Shuai, the finalist in Nottingham, is also there. So maybe she can continue her good run of form. I think Donna Vekic might be in with a good shout. But I mean, Elise Mertens is such a consistent player. I wouldn't be surprised if she went on and won the tournament.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, yeah, Vekic didn't do so well in Nottingham. She was defending that title. But that Stojanovic as well, who Konta played in the semis, is in the draw. And also Marta Kostyuk, who did well at the French.
I mean, Heather Watson's in there. Got Golubic from Switzerland in the first round. So we're interested to see how she goes. I think she, yeah, Konta's not playing it. So I think all eyes will be on Watson, Jones, and I think Harriet Dart has got Caroline Garcia.
Mm, from a British perspective. But the Berlin is the higher of the two, kind of in terms of, you know, rankings and points. Sabalenka's headlining that one, and Svitolina's the second seed. Andreescu in action, be interesting to see how she does. Karolina Pliskova, you know, Azarenka, Muguruza. So most of the big names are in Berlin. Mukova as well. So yeah, obviously first steps for these players. Most of them are on grass. So I have zero expectations, to be quite honest with you.
I mean, that draw, there's a lot of big players in that draw that I feel like have worked up their credibility on other court surfaces. But as we've not had grass for two years, it's hard to know who is going to come through and be the champion there. You'd think Sabalenka's game is like perfect for a grass court. Let's see. I mean, Azarenka also could be quite dangerous. And Jessica Pegula. How is Jessica Pegula unseeded in that?
I feel still, like
still. I don't know.
And Rybakina is unseeded as well. So, yeah, it's a lottery, really, isn't it? When you go onto the grass after 2 years away from it, like what is going to happen? But we've also got Queens happening much closer to home. Berrettini is the top seed for this one. And Shapovalov is the second seed. Yannick Sinner's there. He's playing Jack Draper tomorrow, which is quite cool. Draper's been given a wild card. You know, he's a young British guy. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. Dan Evans is also there. Obviously, Andy Murray as well with a wild card. He's got Benoit Paire in the first round. So that's might be quite a memorable match.
What are the Andy Murray expectations going into Queens? I don't even know if he's, you know, going to be, is he he's not on the order of play for Monday. So if he does play pair, it will be on the Tuesday. This feels to me like they're giving him as literally much time as possible for him to get ready. So I'm still a bit 50-50 in terms of whether that match will kind of go ahead. I know he's kind of obviously been on the practice courts, but I'm still have a bit of trepidation there in terms of whether that will go ahead. But it's quite a, you know, if he does play and if he does come through Benoit Paire, who's, you know, we know has been not having the best of times late on the tour, he could get Berrettini, the top seed, in the second round. So it would be quite a tough kind of welcome back. But you know, I don't think there's any surprises there. You know, he's a wild card, he's unseeded. His position is up to the draw gods, so it wasn't really a surprise, I think.
Yeah, it's a 500 event, and we've definitely seen stronger Queens draws in the past, but you know, you've still got the likes of like Karatsev's there, Fognini, players like that. I mean, Berrettini, I don't see Andy getting past him. It'd be interesting to see how Cam Norrie gets on. I think he's got a decent run through. But yes, it's I think Haller is the tournament, obviously, with the more high caliber field. You know, I mean, we've got Federer, obviously, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, who took a wild card. You know, Goffin, Monfils, Zverev, like they're, you know, pretty much all there. And I mean, do you think Federer is going to come through like he, you know, often does at Halle? Mm. This is very much one of his tournaments.
It is. And he could face Medvedev in the quarterfinals. I certainly think he's got an opportunity. I think he looked really good at the French Open. And I think he will have no issues. I think just kind of transitioning to what he will feel is much, you know, he's very much a home tournament for him in Halle. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get a Federer-Medvedev quarterfinal matchup. Although having said that, Medvedev does have Struff in the first round, which could be quite a tester. But I certainly think, yeah, this is definitely the stronger ATP 500 of the two. And you know, Tsitsipas, the second seed, on a wild card. He's also got a wild card with his brother again, which I'm sure a lot of people will be up in arms in the doubles draw. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at, I think the top half is perhaps a little bit stronger, or with Medvedev, Federer and Zverev all there. So yeah, I just think we'll just have to wait and see. But I think Federer might, I'm not expecting, I mean, it'll be amazing, but I'm not expecting a Federer singles champion at the end of the week.
No, I think, I mean, potentially like Rublev could come through. You know, he lost first round Roland Garros. He's had a few weeks off now to get back on track. So, yeah, I mean, because before his Roland Garros blip, he, you know, is having a decent season. But we shall see. We'll be back next week to chat all things Halle, Berlin, Birmingham and Queens. It's all UK and German, isn't it, tournaments this week. But yeah, thank you to everyone who has listened to us over the last couple of weeks from Roland Garros doing our catch-ups. It's been fantastic to chat all things French Open every other day with you, Joel. And I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to us, you know, chatter on about it all.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. And listeners, yeah, we just want to say thank you for your support. You know, we've been engaging with you guys on Twitter as well, and I hope you've really been enjoying listening to our round by round catch-ups. We are going to be going back to our weekly tour catch-up, and I think we're going to be throwing in some Passing Shot Meets episodes in along the way, hopefully, so stay tuned. But yeah, I hope you've really enjoyed listening to our round by round coverage of Roland Garros. So I think we're going to wrap it up there for our coverage. I think we can have a big lie down now, Kim. But listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to the Passing Shot, and if you want to stay up to date on all things tennis on the grass court season coming up on the ATP and WTA tours, make sure as always to subscribe to the Passing Shot on your podcasting platform of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Castbox, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button. And you can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And finally, as I said, I feel like I always say this, but genuinely, if you want to help out the show and you've been really enjoying our round by round coverage over the last couple of weeks, make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. It would really mean so much to me and Kim. You know, we put a lot of effort into this, and you know, it sometimes does feel like a, you know, a job alongside our kind of main jobs, but our listeners kind of make it all worthwhile. So if you can do that, that would really, really help us out.
Indeed. And otherwise, you can also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. So if you don't already follow us, you can definitely give us a like and tell your friends about us as well. Anyone who's maybe been watching the French Open and likes a bit of tennis and they don't already follow us, just let them know. You can contact us on all of those channels. But if you prefer to get in touch via email, you can also do that as well. PassingShotPod@gmail.com.
And we will be back next week, next Sunday, for a regular tour catch-up where we will be taking in all the events from Queens, Halle, and also Birmingham and Berlin. So I hope you can join us for that. And we will see you again soon.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.